Good evening, folks. This is The Weird Part. I am your host, Vincent Treewild, and I am very pleased this evening to introduce my special guest, experiencer, researcher, investigator, and host of Cryptonormal Encounters with B. Moss, Bettina Moss. Welcome to The Weird Part. Go ahead, Bettina.
Hi, Vincent. How are you?
Good, good. Having a nice evening? How about yourself?
I'm doing pretty good. About good as you can be expected here in Alabama, where it's hot as hell and humid.
I believe you.
I'm suffering here, but pretty good otherwise.
Excellent, excellent. You are the host of Cryptonormal Encounters with B. Moss, an absolutely fascinating page on Facebook. Would it be fair to say that most of your material deals with the phenomenon of the Dogman?
Yes, Vincent. Originally, I pretty much, because of my Dogman encounter, the first one and then multiple sightings and encounters after that, that's originally my thought process behind starting the group because of my encounters and what I saw for myself. And kind of what I witnessed from them, their behavior, the ones I saw. I never had any aggressive encounters with them, but just for the what I seen them do and how I seen them watch and stuff like that. So from a period of 2013 to 2017, I guess that's all the way up to 2019 before my parents moved out of the house. So that my encounter and multiple sightings after that, as well as my nephew's encounter and having listened to several years of several different Dogman shows, cryptid shows, Brenton Sawin, Jeff Nadoni, Dark Waters, Vic Cundiff. So after listening to those shows for several years, it basically made me decide one day, I want to start a group. I want to start a group and I want to talk about my encounters, and I want to be kind of a person that's easy to talk to, down to earth, and I want to have dialogue with other eyewitnesses and people who might need to talk about these things or trying to get an understanding of what these things are, just like, you know, myself. It's centered, mostly you'll see more of a strong center towards Dogman and Bigfoot stuff in the group. But I called it Cryptonormal because for a couple of reasons. One, crypto, that's for cryptids, normal, paranormal, because I believe that these creatures, Dogman and Bigfoot, I believe that they are, we say cryptids, you're looking at that like an animal that's not, not recognized by science as a real living, breathing creature. They look at them like mythological creatures or fairy tale type creatures. So that's the cryptid aspect of it. But normal, that I put cryptid and paranormal together and it's called it Cryptonormal. So because I think that they are flesh and blood, and I do also think that they are also paranormal at the same time because of their abilities, because of what I've seen them do, and because of several other encounters that I've heard over the years, that's what made me come to that conclusion. They are able to do things that are not natural to your average everyday animal or even human. So that's why I called it Cryptonormal. And yeah, it's more centered towards that, but I don't want it to be only centered towards that. It's also centered for anybody else who wants to come in and tell their encounters or sightings or experiences with the paranormal, whether it be hauntings or demonic activity, possession, UFOs, aliens, any other strange phenomena that people deal with. I open it up for everybody. It's just that more people that are in the group, they mostly are sharing their cryptid encounters.
And you probably find a lot of people who are looking for a forum where they can get this off their chest and without like somebody saying they're crazy, tell experiences that they've had. I mean, you seem to provide a real open setting for that, which is very nice.
Yes, I'd like for people to feel comfortable to come there and share their experiences, share their sightings, share their encounters, their content, whether that be their photos that they've taken, pictures, videos, their opinions and thoughts and their beliefs. We all know that there's several different aspects and different beliefs and theories about what these cryptids are.
Oh, but yes.
The way I look at it, I feel like that everybody should have a voice. Just because somebody else has a completely different viewpoint on them, that doesn't necessarily mean for me that I don't want them to be heard. I want them to be able to speak too, because I feel like when you basically filter it to only having people in your group or on your shows that only believe as you, you are doing a disservice to your members, because you're putting these things in a box when you do that. None of us is an expert. Nobody has all the answers, but what I don't allow in my group, or what I try to control for the most part, and I know it gets harder the larger group grows, but what I try to do is make people feel like they come to a comfortable environment to do so without being ridiculed, disrespected, or mocked, or made fun of. So yeah, I want people to be able to do that. I've heard too many encounters where people already deal with that kind of ridicule from friends and family. They shouldn't have to come to a group or a show with like-minded individuals and deal with more of the same. So I'm really strict and die hard on not allowing that in my group.
That's a great philosophy to have. And that's what I try to do here, that I am not the final authority on much of anything. Okay. And I don't tell you what's real or what's not real. And I will certainly have people on that I may disagree with, but I still respect their opinion and I want to hear what they have to say. Mm-hmm. And that's, I think, a good way to go about it.
I agree with that, because like I said, I didn't learn all that I learned by just listening to my own thought process or my own beliefs when it comes to these cryptids. A lot of what I gathered was from listening to all aspects of it. And maybe there's some aspects that I haven't heard. Now, there's theories about them being aliens or interdimensional beings, some of them being the Watchers or the Nephilim, some of them being flesh and blood only, some of them being like, you know, demons. So there's several different theories. Now, when you put yourself in a box, or when you narrow it down and you put them in a box like that, you're not going to learn everything that there is to learn about these things. And to me, from what I've gathered and from what I've seen for myself, the only theory as it relates to these cryptids is that actually answers all of it for me is the Nephilim theory, because the Nephilim were flesh and blood, because they could die. I mean, they could kill, they ate, they did everything else, like, you know, fallen angels. They were the spawn of the fallen angels and human women, if you're biblically centered. And from a non-biblical standpoint, like with Greek mythology and stuff like that, even there, they may not have said fallen angels, they said the gods or the titans. Same thing. They came down and had relations with human women, and the result was these giant people like Hercules and Zeus and, you know, Triton, all those like that. So when you look at that, there still was some kind of infiltration into humanity that caused these giant beings, human and animal as well. The Book of Enoch goes further in depth about the fact that they were also procreating with the animals as well. A few other books, the Book of Giants, these are all books from the Apocrypha that were taken out, and you have to pretty much download or go buy those online or whatever to actually see, but these are books that were taken out. Now, the Book of Genesis covers it, not really, it kind of hints at something, but it just, when it says that the all creation had corrupted its way on the earth, that's why God wanted to wipe out all the inhabitants of the earth, the animals, the birds, the fish, and that all creation had, disrupted against his way, and it was just out of order. So, because I used to wonder, like, why would he kill all the animals too? That I didn't understand it then, but then when you look at the Book of Enoch and it goes into the fact that the fallen angels were also procreating with them as well. You can just imagine if the result of a fallen angel or angel or deity or demigod or whatever you want to call it, with a human as the result is a giant, then whatever the result would be for those fallen angels or superheroes, whatever you want to call it, procreating with animals, you're going to get a giant version of that as well. So basically, he was basically, I feel like, going into trying to remove all of the animals that had been tainted.
I'm absolutely fascinated with the Nephilim theory. That and the fact that it is worldwide, and it is biblical, but it's also in a lot of different mythologies around the world.
Mm-hmm.
I find that absolutely fascinating. And it does explain a lot of things, however you think of what the Nephilim are. Before we, and I just want to shift gears a little bit here, but could you tell our audience your own, you mentioned it, but just briefly, your own encounter or your own first encounters that kind of drew you in this direction?
Yes. So before I had my first encounter, I already knew that Dogman, Bigfoot, other cryptids existed. And I've always believed that ever since I was a teenager. I've seen shows like Sightings back in the day, Unsolved Mysteries, and any other weird shows that used to come out. So back at that time, I guess back in the 90s or my teenage years, there wasn't the internet like it is today. We had the internet, but it was nothing like it is now. So you didn't have all these different podcasts talking about Dogman and Bigfoot. We had like the National Enquirer, and the National Enquirer was always making fun of people who've been abducted by aliens, or the Loch Ness Monster sightings, or, you know, just whatever was cryptid related. They always made fun of it like it was a joke. But I still, no matter what, even as a teenager and as a child, I still thought that was interesting. And I thought, no, there's something to this. So I knew about Dogman already, because I believed in Bigfoot for years. And before I ever got into listening to Dogman Encounters, I actually was big on listening to people's encounters about Sasquatch or Bigfoot or the forest people. So I would listen to Sasquatch Chronicles, all these different shows. And one day I came across a podcast, or several podcasts. I think it might have been Big Condom Show. He was talking about Dogman Encounters, and he had like all these different guests on there. And I originally laughed it off, because I was like, oh, wow, we're just really reaching now, because a lot of people, you know, just want to have something else. This is ridiculous. Got to listening to it. The more I got to listen, the more encounters I heard, the more I became a believer, okay, there's something to this. These people are not just seeing anything. So I knew about them for several years before I ever had a sighting myself. So to get right into my encounter, it was November of 2013, and it was about 8 o'clock at night. During hunting season every year, my husband would go, and he would go hunting, and sometimes he would go to like a hunting club with other guys, and it might stay going for about 3 or 4 days sometimes. So, and you know, especially also during the holidays, Thanksgiving and stuff like that. So whenever he would go hunting, instead of staying at the house by myself, me and my little dog, I would just drive to where my parents live at and spend the weekend with them, and, you know, just kind of enjoy time with my family. So it was just like any other weekend. He's going to be gone for a few days, so I'll just go over here, spend time with mom and dad, and just enjoy the weekend like any other time. So that particular night was like every other night that I would drive to their house on the weekends. I'm going to give y'all the layout of how their house and their driveway is set up and the surroundings, so that you can kind of paint a picture in your mind of what exactly how it's parked, or kind of give you an idea of the area so you can paint a picture of this. But my parents had one of those ranch style houses from the 80s, rectangular shaped. On the side of the front of the house, like, that's not where anybody parks at. We park on the side of the house. That's where their driveway was. Their driveway was at an incline under a lattice carport. So there's space for two vehicles to park under there. And then they had an extended area of concrete driveway off to the far right. That's where my dad's pickup truck would be. So whenever I would go to visit them on those weekends, there was nowhere for me to park in the driveway because all their vehicles are already there. So whenever I would come to their house, I would park under this tree on the sidewalk like that, and then just walk up the incline driveway. And so I would always park under this tree on the road next to the curb. Now, as you pull into their neighborhood, they lived on the end of the neighborhood that was a cul-de-sac. If you turn into the neighborhood and you turn left, you're going further into the neighborhood where the other houses are. But on the end of the neighborhood where my parents lived at, there's about five or six houses on that end, and it's a dead end. But directly behind their backyard, it's basically wooded, a whole wooded area, cotton fields sometimes in the summertime, or sometimes it's soybean, cornfield, just they rotate the crops, but that whole area back there behind those fields is wooded. Now, there's a path that leads, or trail, if you will, trail that leads into the woods. So basically that tree that I would park under, like closer to their house, when you park under that, my car is facing the woods already. Like it's facing the woods. My headlights are still on. I hadn't gotten out of the car that night. I'm still sitting there and it's dark. So, you know, pretty much creep myself out already because I'm always driving and listening to Dogman Encounters or creepy
okay.
stuff.
Okay. Go ahead. I do the same thing. So go ahead.
So I'd already creep myself out because I believed them, but I still never thought I would have an encounter. So anytime I would go to their house for the weekend, I would pack a suitcase and, you know, I'd have a, you know, even if it's for 2 days, I pack for 5 days. And so I had my suitcase in the back, and then everything else that I had, like in the front seat, I would try to gather as much as I could out of the front seat, put it in my purse or bags or whatever I had with me so that I wouldn't have to like make another trip outside, just lazy. And so I was gathering everything from the front seat so that I wouldn't be standing out there too long. So I had not cut the car off yet. The headlights are still on, facing, like pointing straight or shining straight into that trail. But I'm not paying attention to that. I'm digging in my purse. And then for whatever reason, I guess after I gathered everything that I needed, you know, when you look back up, you're automatically looking straight ahead because you're looking straight ahead. And so I look and I see something extremely black, very tall. And the first thing that comes to my mind is, I know that that's not what I think it is. Because, of course, you listen to encounters all these years, but you never, ever expect that you're going to actually have your own sighting in your small little town. And to actually see something in real time like that is mind-boggling, because it's like, now, even though it was real to me before, you know, I don't know. You know how they say shit just got real? It's like,
oh, yes. It's a big difference. Hearing and reading, and even one-on-one hearing somebody's story, mm-hmm. and then actually encountering it yourself, mm-hmm. that's a whole different step, you know?
Yeah.
When you say very dark or very black, would you say it was like darker than the darkness around it?
Yes, I'm going to go right into that. So when I said, I know that's not what I think it is, I put my high beams on. Before I go any further, I forgot one thing I wanted that I left out that's important. What I saw was something tall, something black, something huge, and it had its back to me. I'm standing on 2 feet. It was never on all fours. It had its back to me. I put the high beams on it. So when I put the high beams on it, I pretty much at that point spotlighted it. As long as I was digging in my purse, I don't know how long it was standing there. I don't think it just walked there and then stood there and just paused. I think that when I pulled up to the curb that night, I believe what happened was is that thing had already been standing there, but it's used to people who pull into the neighborhood not keeping straight ahead into that dead end area. They're usually coming in and then turning left, going towards other houses. So I believe I caught it off guard. So it had its back to me, and it was getting ready to head, I think, down into, it did head down that trail, but I'll get into that. So I put the high beams on it. When I put the high beams on it, this confirmed my greatest fear. It confirmed that what I thought it was really true. I'm looking at a dog man right now. And this just wasn't any regular dog man. This was like, I don't know to say, Hulk Hogan on steroids, or any like bodybuilder that you can think of, The Rock. But then, so it had the upper body of, I guess like the upper body of a man. Like it had the long arms, it had the pecs, it had the abs. It was very muscular. It was jet black. And to answer your question, yes, it was darker than the darkness around it. My parents' neighborhood, they moved in that house in 85. So the lighting out there is like, you remember the lighting on those, they had those long, those big, tall telephone poles back in the day, and that's what the lighting was in the neighborhood?
Oh, yes, yes.
Okay. And remember how, like, back in the day, all those power lines and stuff would just be just tacky, just hanging across from one pole to the next.
Oh, yes. Yeah, we had that too.
Kind of like that. But there was no light on that end. So I think that even if what it was probably expecting is even if somebody did pull up there or pull up and have headlights on it, it wasn't going to be for long. And they weren't, most people probably pull up and just park and then cut the lights off. So basically what happened next is that when I put the headlights on it, the high beams, it turned and it looked back at me. It didn't look at the car. Like if you put the headlights or blow the horn at a dog or something like that, it's going to look at the car. It's not going to have the mental capacity or the thought to actually look in through the windshield, straight into the driver's seat and straight directly into your eyes. It's not going to think about that. But this thing looked straight into the driver's seat. It looked straight into my eyes, and we had like eye contact for 8 to 10 seconds.
Wow. That's got to be intense.
When it looked into my eyes for those 8 to 10 seconds, at this point, and like I said, it's been since 2013, so I don't remember right now. And I say this on all my shows. I don't remember if I said it out loud or if I thought this, but I do remember. I'm just going to say, I'm going to say I said it out loud. I'm not sure though. Either way, I said it, whether it was in my head or whether it was out loud. I said, please God, don't let that thing come over here, because this will be one of those times that the car door is not locked. Because sometimes when I would get off from work or get back from wherever I'm going, I pull up in the driveway at home, automatic car locks, when you drive off, automatically they lock. But sometimes, I don't know if it was a blown fuse or what the deal was, but sometimes it wouldn't lock. I would pull up in the driveway sometimes and the door should be locked. And my husband would come outside and he would open the door, and I would get creeped out immediately because I would think to myself, now, what if that had been dog man? So that's what came up in my head that night. This might be one of those times the door does not lock. So when I said that, the next thing I heard in my head, in my mind, like it was speaking to me or answering what I just said, it said, oh, it's just you. No big deal. Which meant to me, Vincent, is that it knew me. It knew who I was. It had seen me before, probably seen me for years. I was 5 years old when I moved in that house with my parents in 1985. So I don't know if it had been there all those years, but it had been there long enough that it knew that I wasn't a threat to it. And it was there long enough that it knew who it was there long enough that it seen me come and go and wasn't worried about me. So when it said that, I guess I should probably give a little bit more detail of what this thing looked like before I go on.
I was going to nitpick you with some questions in a minute, but go ahead.
So when I told you about how it looked into my eyes for 8 to 10 seconds and it answered my thought, when it first looked into the windshield and looked in my eyes in that 8 to 10 second pause, we were just basically looking at each other. It didn't have those amber eyes like everybody talks about. I do believe that some of them do have amber eyes, but I also have seen ones with black eyes, and it's just not just cut and dry when it comes to their different variations of fur color or eye color. There's several different ways that they come. But this one had, the best way I can describe it is those beautiful turquoise blue ocean pictures that you see on those tropical island beaches, the oceans like that. So if you take that turquoise blue color like that and you make it luminescent. It had those blue glowing eyes. It was that color, you know, self-luminescent. It wasn't because of my headlights. I've seen my headlights on deer or raccoon or skunks or possums or anything else like that before. And it's going to give that reddish, greenish tinge to it, which is eye shine. This wasn't that. This wasn't that. And the reason I also say that this wasn't that is because I drive a 2008 Cadillac CTS. And you know that those cars sit low to the ground. This thing was about 8.5 to 9 feet tall.
Wow.
The car sits low.
Uh-huh.
Well, like if you've seen those cars, you know.
Oh, yes. They're low-riding sedan, yeah.
Yes. So you have to like basically turn at angles and all that kind of stuff in order to even pull into a driveway and not screw over the ground. So no, this is about 8.5, 9 feet tall. When it said, oh, it's just you, no big deal. It turned its back and continued to walk down the path into the woods, like where it was originally, I think, headed to when I pulled up and spotlighted it. When I first pulled up and parked, I think it just stood still real quick because it realized, okay, somebody's in a car that just pulled up behind me. Now, it was about 8.5 to 9 feet tall.
Which is just, if you think about it, enormous. We consider, like, I think Shaquille O'Neal's like 7'8".
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, we're talking something that hulks over him.
Yep. My tallest cousin is like 6'5". So I was like, I knew for myself, this is way taller than him. This is like 3 feet, 2.5, 3 feet taller than him. And so I'm looking at this thing and I'm just in awe. Like, so tears start rolling down my face. And at any other normal night, I had a key to my parents' house back then even now to their new house. So, but any other night, like before I ever knew about Dogman's existence or anything like that, once I was no longer living with my parents and I could go there whenever I wanted to, like, you know, to go to the house and for whatever I needed, I had a key. So sometimes, like, before I got scared, because after this encounter, I would go over there and it was no big deal. Like every now and then, mom and dad would lock the storm doors. Like if I took too long to get over there and they thought I wasn't coming, then I would get there, you know, drag my suitcase up the hill and, you know, sitting there, I got Chloe, my little dog in my hand and purse and everything else, get to the storm door and it's locked. Then I have to stand out there and ring the doorbell. But that was like bliss. Now looking back on it, like not knowing that these things existed. So I would have to wait out there sometime 5 minutes for daddy to like put on some pajamas or something like that and come up there and unlock the door. But now if they were still living in that house, would I have, after that, did I ever stand out there again? You know, to like if I came late and they were going to bed already? No, absolutely not. I never did that again. There was times just late at night, 10, 11 o'clock. I might go out and sit on the front porch and smoke a cigarette or go out there and sit under the carport and smoke a cigarette. Not worried about anything. If there's anything back there, it's probably a fox or some coyotes or something like that. I'm not worried about anything. But after that night, that changed everything. And I changed the way I did everything after that. And I would go to visit them. The dog man had the tapered waist. It had the hawk style legs. I don't remember seeing the tail, even though its back was to me. I wasn't paying attention to that. I think more than anything, I was looking at its stature. I didn't want to take my eyes off of it. Maybe just certain features. I guess it was just certain things that stood out to me. But it didn't have that German Shepherd style head that a lot of people talk about. I have seen one like that more than once, but that particular one was not that. It had a head more like a pit bull or a Rottweiler, a broad head, and it didn't have the elongated German Shepherd Anubis snout. It had a shorter, broad snout like either one of those two dogs I just mentioned, Rottweiler, pit bull. And it didn't have those tall, pointy ears on top of its head. It had more of the short, stubby, cropped type ears. This thing was massive.
Oh, yeah.
Tell you about that. So when I did not go proceed to get out of the car at that point. I sat there because my mind was trying to rationalize this whole time while I'm sitting there. I'm trying to rationalize. Now, if that thing decides to walk over here, what can you do? That's a dead end straight ahead.
Uh-huh.
Number two, you're parked next to this curb. In order to pull back out of this neighborhood, you have got to like bag your car up like super fast, like peel out and hope that you can bag that fast and then turn deeper into the neighborhood to come out on the other end. Fast as these things are, from what I've heard, that they can run 65 or 70 miles an hour and keep up with your car. For me,
which would be absolutely terrifying. I mean, that'd be really bad. You know?
Oh, yeah. So, and I'm at a complete standstill. I mean, just think the minute that that thing would have taken off running, I would have been in such shock. I think I probably would have frozen up, not knowing what to do. And then if you want to know how close I was to this dog, man, I've always said I'm not good at gauging distance. But what I can say is, because I'm kind of OCD, what I can say is that I've traced and counted the steps from where I was parked to where it was standing. And I know that's anywhere from 60 to 80 steps, depending on how big the steps are. So 60 to 80 steps, I would have been face to face with it. I'm just glad that night I didn't just pull up, turn off the headlights and get out of the car immediately and then walk around to the passenger side and gather my suitcase slowly and get everything out the back and come around to the front side of the car and passenger side and get everything. No, I was meant to stay in that car at that moment. I wasn't supposed to get out because no idea that the thing was there. But I learned some things later, and I'm gonna let you ask more questions because I know I can kind of ramble on about this.
No, it's fine. I've got questions, but I want to let you finish and okay. Go ahead.
So don't let me forget to mention to you later. I didn't say this, but where it was standing on the trail that leads into the woods. But it was standing directly in front of this big tree. I always call that tree a bush because I don't know if it's not a pine tree. It's, I don't know if it's like a fir tree or what, but the way it's shaped, it's perfectly rounded, almost like a huge bush type tree. It's like almost like a curtain at the bottom to where if you were a dog that lived out in the wild or any wild animal, that is the perfect shelter to go under, even if you were a kid and playing hide and seek. That is the perfect place. It goes all the way down to the bottom like a curtain when all the leaves and stuff are on it. And from what I've seen for myself with that tree in the fall and even in the summertime, in spring, because when Kumbo came here, and I'll mention that later, but basically what I saw is that about 10, anywhere between 15 to 20 humans could fit underneath that tree. And that's just laying on the ground. It's that perfect underneath there for a shelter. Nobody would ever see you when it's got complete coverage. As far as dog men are concerned, I would say probably about seven or eight of them could be under there comfortably and nobody ever see them. And they've got perfect shelter. And they're also would be able from inside. When I say inside of the tree, I mean, as if you could actually go under the tree. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Oh, absolutely. We have fir trees up here and pine trees, and yeah, you get underneath, and you've got a canopy, you've got like a nature-made tent, basically.
Perfect. Yes, exactly. So it was huge under there. So I'll get into the part about Kumbo later, but I found out something about that tree. When Kumbo was here, I'll tell you that, and we'll get into that later. But that is the particular tree that dog man was standing in front of that night when I saw it when it was getting ready to head into that path. And what was interesting about that is that at that time, my mind's racing from thought to thought. And I was like, how did I just happen to see this thing? Because they're so elusive. But my rationale on it is that I was never meant to see that night. What happened was that's the time it probably comes out to hunt or to go do whatever it does at night, whatever. And I just so happened at that very moment to pull up and not get out of my car right away. It's so black. It probably already, they're self-aware. It already knows that most people are not paying attention or even looking for them. Most people on that end of the neighborhood were older people. So they're not coming out of their houses at night. So this thing knew that. And I think that I caught it off guard. And when it turned back to look and see, oh, it's just, no big deal. It turned its back and casually continued on its original path down further into those woods. I sat there in awe for about a few minutes. I had tears rolling down my face like, oh my God, this just happened. I didn't get out. I sat there for a minute and then I scrambled for my phone after a few minutes and I called inside the house and I asked my dad to come out. And of course, you know, I had never told him about Dogman, but he was like, no, you, ain't nothing for you to be scared of. You come on in this house. Daddy, please, please, there's something out here. No, come on, you all right? We all in the house. Come, Daddy, please. You know what, Daddy, forget it. Let me speak to Keyshawn. My dad puts my nephew on the phone. Of course, my nephew, he's about 15 or 16 at the time. I said, Keyshawn, please come out here and walk me in the house. I do not want to get out of this car right now. Matter of fact, I left my suitcase and everything out there the next day. I said, forget all that. I just want to get in the house. That's all I can think about to daylight. Because it's 8 o'clock at night. And I know I didn't write the date down at that time because I just didn't write it down. But I know that it was November because I know that it was the week before Thanksgiving. And I remember thinking about all the food my mom would be cooking that following week. So then that falls into hunting season two. So it's a lot of stuff to deal with. But after seeing that for the first time, I knew at that moment, when you see one, there's more. There's not just that one. There's more back there. So that is what got me started from that point on to randomly taking pictures and recording video on a regular basis during the time period from 2013 all the way up to 2019 before my parents moved out of that house, regularly recording and taking pictures because I knew that this is not just a chance, a coincidence that this one just so happened to be right here, up close and personal, out in the front. This is pretty bold. The other ones are probably pretty bold like that too. So I started taking pictures, videos, and I was really shocked at some of the stuff that I seen in the videos and the pictures and some of the things I've seen them do. But after that night, that's part recording. And I guess maybe after enough time had passed, I don't know if it's been a year later or 2 years later or whatever, but I know that that is also what made me go back into those woods back there because I wanted to see at that point, can I find evidence back there? Can I find something that looks like a nest? I want to see footprints back there.
And yeah. I think I know what you're going to mention. Let me ask you one question real quick. When you locked eyes with this dog man, did you feel a presence of evil? And I realize that's subjective, but it seemed to kind of dismiss you pretty casually, like you were no big deal to it. Mm-hmm. But did you feel like this is an evil entity or just this is a natural entity or something else?
I felt when it said, in my head, like, because you hear people talk about that telepathic speaking, that is the, I've seen multiple dog men since then, but that is the one and only time that I can say that I actually heard something speak telepathically like that. To me, what that meant was, oh, I know you. You're no harm. You're not for me to worry about. Like, I don't have to be, almost like I caught it off guard. Like, you know how you catch something off guard and it's shocked?
Oh, yes.
It, like, who is that? I've been caught.
Red-handed. Kind of that phenomenon of they didn't know you could see them.
Right. Well, I did not feel an evil presence or vibe. I didn't smell anything. The windows were all up. I didn't feel a sense of evil from that one, because it didn't come off like that. When it spoke, I mean, I understood that this thing is talking to me. It didn't move its mouth, but I heard what it said. And I knew that once it said that to me, oh, it's just, you know, big deal. It casually turned its back and continued to slowly walk down that trailer path. It didn't go down on all fours. It didn't take off running. It casually strode like you're just going out to walk the dog. No big deal.
With the time that's passed in between, do you think if it would have come upon you, or if you would have gotten out or somehow other surprised it closer, do you think it would have done you any harm, or if it just would have left on its own anyway?
Okay. I can't say, but what I can't say for sure, but it didn't view me as a threat. But I will say this to answer that question better, is that during some of the other multiple dogman encounters that happened after that, there were times that I was not in the car. I would be in the backyard. They had a chain link fence. I used to like to, I didn't have a fence at my house with my husband at the time. So I would love to be over there on the weekends, because I would take Chloe outside and let her play in the backyard. There's been plenty of times where I looked off to the left, because that's behind the fence, looked off to the left, and I would see them standing there in the trees, just watching Chloe run and play. But they were, that one and only time was the one and only time, the first encounter, that I actually seen it standing out full body, head to toe. Well, that's not true. Well, with my eyes, that's the only time I seen one standing head to toe, full body view. I do have a picture of one that's standing in a tree. This one is not black. If I had to tell you what it looked like a, I'm gonna say either a husky or a wolf, because it had the charcoal gray body. It had the light gray or whitish colored snout. It's standing at a profile, so profile angle. So you're looking at it from its side. So you can see both ears on top of its head. You can see its head, upper neck, shoulder area, down to the area right under where your underarm would be. And then there's a branch that comes across its waist, and directly below that is its, I guess what we would call our hip area, your thigh, the hock style legs of that, and then the feet. I forgot, what do you call those feet? Not plantigrade, it was a digitigrade, but the way a dog's feet are. You can see that the feet were the exact same color as the snout.
Okay.
Light gray, and that was the same color. You can see one eye because it's standing at the side. You're looking at profile view. Now, with my naked eye, did I see that at the time? No. This is one of those days I'm in the yard and I'm playing with Chloe. And then I don't know if it's just your intuition, your sixth sense, or your whatever you want to call it, but something told me, look over there to the left. When I looked over there to the left, what I did see, and I have a picture of this, what I did see was that there was something that was in that tree, but I can't say what it is. I just see something that is blacker than black. It's so black that I can't make it out. It doesn't make sense. It's darker than all the shadows right now. And this is broad daylight. It's jet black. And so I knew at that point, that's not right. I said, Chloe, my little dog at that time, she'll be 14 this year. So I don't remember what year this was. I'm going to say probably around 2017, 2018. But Chloe could run really fast. She would take off running. I'd walk towards her to try to pick her up because I'm ready to get out of the backyard now. I don't want to be back here anymore. I'm ready to go because there's something not right. Every time I'd approach her, she'd take off running full speed. So at certain points, the more I ran and tried to get her, the more she would take off full speed, until I finally had to yell at her really loud and let her know I'm serious. Get over here now. So,
Oh, little dogs that think they're big are quite something. Yes. I have one myself. Yes.
Yes. So she hunkered down to the ground. I picked her up. And when I got further away, because I'm in the middle of that backyard, just to, like, basically, if I would have jumped over that backside of that fence and crossed the ditch behind the fence and walked up into that cotton field, I would have been right there face to face with those two dog men. There was two of them. Now, I didn't know just yet that there was anything there, but I do know that something told me, look over there. I knew that that wasn't right. I knew it was way darker. There shouldn't be anything that black right now. So when I finally scooped Chloe up, when I got closer towards the front of the gate, like to leave out of the backyard and go back in the house, I didn't start taking pictures until then. I started taking multiple pictures back to back to back. And before I went inside the house, I looked at the pictures. I was like, oh, shit. Hell no. I've got to get... That was it for me for that day. I did not go back outside after that.
Oh, that, yeah. That must have been terrifying, to be honest.
That thing, I'll send you the pictures, Vincent. This is the picture. This picture is the one I call the Holy Grail Dogman photo. I call it that. I coined it that. Because this particular... Now, of course, you can see the one that's standing bipedal. You can see almost the full body other than the area of the branches and leaves that go across the ways. You can see it. It's full body. You can see it standing up. But directly up, just a little bit and to the right of that, was a massive jet black, blacker than black, head with, you could see the snout, the short snout. You could see... You know what the black dog nose looks like? Like, you know what I'm talking about?
Oh, yes, of course.
You could see the nose. You could see the ears on top of its head. And again, that was not the German Shepherd style ears. It was more the crop ears. So that may have been the one that I saw that night in 2013. I don't know. But the head was so huge that in my mind, when you see it, you'll see what I'm talking about. But the head was so huge on that thing. It just puts you, you can picture how big the body would have to be for that head. It wasn't like the gray one that was standing in the tree below it. It wasn't like that. This was like a Goliath dog, man. So I can only imagine if all the leaves had disappeared off of that tree. That one, based on the head alone, I would have to imagine that had to have been like 10, 11, 12 feet tall. There's no, it had to have been huge. The head was gigantic. And then not only that, it was snarling at me. It was showing its teeth.
That was a different kind of experience because that was showing some real aggression.
It was just something told me, I don't know if the Holy Spirit or God or Sixth Sense or whatever, but I know it's something said, look over there. And when I looked, I've seen something black, but I just couldn't make it out. But when I started taking pictures, that's when I was like, oh yeah. Yeah, you had enough being outside for today. Go in the house. That's enough.
I certainly don't blame you there. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
And then I got mad. I said, what you snarling at me for? You came to me. I didn't come to you. You came up here to see what I was doing. I'm in my backyard. You stay over there. I stay up here. So to answer your question, as far as the aggressive, they could have at any point, you know how fast they are. They could have at any point crossed out. They didn't have to hide behind those trees. They didn't have to hide behind those branches. They could at any point came out and crossed that barrier, crossed over that ditch and jumped directly over into the backyard with me and the dog. And we just would have been gone. Nobody would have ever known a thing. But they never did. When any time I would go outside to smoke a cigarette and, you know, just chill and record nature, no matter what, almost every single time I went out there to record, they would always show up. They would always be there. I don't care if I was out there for 30 minutes to an hour, they were there. And they came, and it wasn't like, when I say subtle, it's not like I seen them like walk up or anything. It's just that I knew exactly where to look to see them. And I knew exactly how to, you know, picture them or see them in photos. A lot of people, when it comes to Dogman and Bigfoot, they are looking to see a Hollywood version of Dogman and Bigfoot. And it just doesn't work like that, because when it comes to photos and pictures, videos, all that stuff, you don't, I think that these creatures have the ability to manipulate the technology, the equipment.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. There's been a lot of issues with being able to get photographs of these type of entities, and that especially electronic cameras, phone cams, you know, smartphones and digital cameras don't seem to work on them for some reason. Some people say the older technology works. They like the Gimlin Patterson Bigfoot footage, and that if you have real old school photography, it works better. But even then, they seem to be able to control their presentation. Does that sound about right?
Yes. Well, when you say they seem to be able to control their presentation, what do you mean? You mean as far as them being able to cloak, or you mean like whether they allow you to see them or not? What do you mean?
Really both of those. I think that they do have a cloaking ability that you, if they don't want you to take their picture, if they really don't want to, you're not going to be able to. And I know that like on your site, a lot of people bring up pareidolia, and pareidolia is a thing that's happened. That happens to me sometimes, but there's also, I think these things can do a controlled pareidolia where they blend into the shrubbery, or they, you know, blend into whatever the weather, whatever's going on around them, and make themselves less visible. And I think that's not just a trick of shadow. I think that they can do that to make it look like that. That's just me.
Yeah, I do think that they are able to do a whole lot of stuff. Now, I've seen them cloak in different ways. I've seen them do what I call the predator effect, where they have, if anybody, you've seen the movie Predator before.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, so there's a glimmer or like that, what do you call it, like a, I don't know, like a mirage type appearance, or you can see the outline, but it's clear, see-through, whatever.
It's fuzzy, it's pixelated, yeah. You might say, yeah.
I've seen them do that. I've seen them camouflage. I've seen them, when I say camouflage, I mean just the way a tree frog would camouflage, or some of these moths or butterflies, whatever, that blend in so perfectly with their surroundings. Or some of the octopus at the bottom of the ocean, they can like turn themselves the exact same color as their surrounding. I think the dogman also have that same ability. Bigfoot too. I have some pictures that I've taken myself. That there were times when even if the leaves were green and they were standing in front of that, you know, bushes, green grass, leaves, whatever, they could become that color, the same color as the grass and leaves. So I found that very interesting. They could become the exact same color as a tree, as the tree trunk, so much so that you couldn't decipher where the head starts, or the, you know, you couldn't tell, like they blend in that well. And it's like, sometimes you'll look at a picture and at that moment you will see it, like, I see it. But then you go back and look at that same picture later, and it's like, I don't see anything. It's like,
Oh, yes. And I've had that experience with totally normal objects that sometimes the photography just doesn't capture them. But with paranormal entities, it seems to be a lot more that you can, even when you get a picture, it's not really the full experience of what you saw at the time. It's much fainter and much less impressive.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So then there's the pixelated version of it. And then the pixelated is like usually when people try to zoom in because you want to get a closer shot. But then there's also the other factor of it, which I like to call the blur, which they will make the pictures blurry or blob squatch or almost grainy.
Oh, yes.
Or just completely hard to decipher. And I've even seen them as a mist before. And there's been times when I've seen the upper body, maybe the head, necks, and shoulder area, but then there's an opening down below in the leaves and the trees where you should see the legs and the lower body, but it's not there at all. So I've seen them do that. I've seen them manifest from nothing's there at all to appearing before you, like out of nowhere, seeing it manifest like in real time.
Wow.
Like, oh my God, like I cannot believe I'm looking at this right now. This was not there. I'm watching it take form.
That is an intense experience, I'm sure.
I'm upset about it because I actually had an 11-minute video where I was recording for just a long time, just like I always would. I think I was recording one particular dog man that I saw. But in that video, another one manifested in real time on the video, blinking and everything, mouth open and everything. And wow. One day, my stupid self, I'm up there trying to clean out the phone because I got all these screenshots of the phone. I got hundreds of pictures that I'm taking of these things in the phone and videos. And I was just going through there cleaning out stuff and not even really paying attention to what I was removing, just randomly clicking on stuff. And I was like, oh my God, no, you just removed the probably only manifesting in real time perfect video of a dog man blinking and coming into existence right before your eyes. Oh my God, why couldn't this be an iPhone? Because an iPhone, when you delete stuff, all you got to do is go to the trash and open it back up. I got a Samsung, so.
No, I don't blame you. I use the same. Now, I do have to tell you, a friend of mine who is pretty deep into this stuff has documented how evidence of Bigfoot and other paranormal entities. His name is Timothy Renner. He's been on Sasquatch Chronicles. He has his own podcast called Strange Familiars. And he's documented how the evidence disappears, that you can have great evidence and it will somehow just not be available. And it's so often and so common that it can't just be people hitting the wrong button. There seems to be an aspect where it removes evidence of itself somehow, apparently.
Oh yeah, I've heard of that, where they're walking along, you can see the footprints, and then out of nowhere the footprints completely disappear. Like, you know, if you're walking through the middle of an open field or something like that, and it's just walking through the middle of an open field, there's no trees for it to jump in, there's nothing for it to jump into at all, but it completely disappears. Like the footprints are just not. So did it levitate? Did it just, what happened to it? But I've heard people say that they can actually remove their own footprints and stuff like that. So it just makes you wonder, like, it's just kind of nefarious when you look at it.
Oh, yes. Well, there's a great pair of books that I have yet to finish, but I have started, called Where the Footprints End. Okay. By Timothy Renner and Joshua Cutchin. And they go into, it's Bigfoot related mostly, but it is, you know, there's so many evidences of where Bigfoot is this flesh and blood, big ape man creature, but then footprints disappear, or you only get left footprints, or you only, you get one footprint on a spot and you get nothing else, even though it's all like marshy. There should be a trail, but you don't get a trail. You get a few footprints and then they end. And
absolutely,
that's a thing that seems to happen that cannot be explained as far as I know. Hey, Bettina, how would you feel about taking just a short break?
Perfect. I need one anyway.
Great. I'm just going to pause recording then for a couple of minutes, a few minutes, and we'll be right back.
Okay. Ben.